You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It is Thursday, the 12th day of January. We're talking Cardinals baseball today with Jennifer Langosch, our Cardinals reporter. Jen, we thank you for the time as always. And the theme of this week's podcasts are kind of projections for the 2017 season. Before we get to that, though, a bit of news regarding Dexter Fowler, as he has accepted the invitation put out by the White House to celebrate the Cubs World Championship with the outgoing President Barack Obama. And Jen, I'm curious if Dexter had to, I don't know, kind of gain some sort of permission from the Cardinals to be able to do this, to attend this event with his now former team, or is that something completely independent of a team decision and something that Dexter had to make a decision on his own? How did that whole thing shake out?
Yeah, it's a good question, and probably one I'll actually have a better answer for you in a couple of days. Dexter Fowler coming to St. Louis actually this weekend ahead of that White House visit to be here as part of the Cardinals winter warm-up, which is essentially their winter fan fest event. And so he's still going to be able to appear here before he goes up to Chicago and then takes the flight with his, as you mentioned, former Cubs teammates to the White House. So I don't know how it went down, but I can't imagine that the Cardinals would have tried to step in Dexter's way, you know, had he sought their permission to go ahead and make this visit. I mean, obviously, I don't think they want to take away from the accomplishments of what happened while he was in Chicago and take away an opportunity to perhaps take a once-in-a-lifetime visit to the White House. So, you know, I know when the Cardinals in recent years have taken their White House visits after championship years, players that have gone on to other places have rejoined them for those visits if their schedule is permitted. So, you know, there's a little bit of familiarity there, but again, it does not affect his ability to come to St. Louis as he was scheduled to this weekend for his winter warm-up appearance.
And Jen, knowing the Cardinals players as you do, could you envision, you know, anybody on that team, anybody in that clubhouse having any sort of problem with, you know, the new guy who's making all this money, you know, and now he's with his former club, it's a big rival. Can you envision anybody having any sort of issue with this, or is everybody pretty easygoing and they recognize that, you know what, like you said, it could be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. A Cubs title could be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It was for a lot of people. So how do you think that went down?
Yeah, I can't imagine that there would be anyone upset or any animosity shown toward Dexter Fowler for making this decision. And again, you have a lot of people, you know, on this Cardinals roster and this organization that have kind of been here in the situation before, and they understand how rare these opportunities are and how special a championship is, and it is something to be celebrated. So, you know, just because Dexter Fowler is changing from blue to red doesn't mean you take this accomplishment off his list of career achievements. You know, certainly it's going to happen. I think it's nice that it happens, you know, during the off season, as opposed to maybe him leaving the team on an off day per se to jump a flight to D.C. to go do this, you know, with the Cubs at that point. The fact that it happens before spring training even starts, I think logistically is probably a really good thing. But no, I would expect his teammates to encourage him to go, to enjoy that opportunity, and then to come to spring training with stories about it that they hope they can build on here to take their own White House trip of their own when Dexter Fowler is a St. Louis Cardinal.
Yeah, excellent point. I remember back in 2005 opening day for the Red Sox, here comes Derek Lowe, who was a postseason hero when the Red Sox broke the curse in 04. He was a Dodger, signed as a free agent in the offseason. Here he comes, you know, with the rest of his former teammates in a Red Sox uniform. It was a little bit weird, but I don't think anybody with the Dodgers held any ill will towards Derek Lowe, considering the magnitude of what the Red Sox did, similar to what the Cubs did, ending their 108-year drought. So like you said, I don't think there's going to be any problems going forward. It's a nice occasion for Dexter Fowler, but then it's all systems go once that visit is done. And Jen, that takes us right into projection number one for the Cardinals for 2017, and it involves the newest St. Louis Cardinal, Dexter Fowler. So I want to present to you this scenario. Dexter Fowler is given a standing ovation at Wrigley Field before his first at-bat wearing a Cardinals uniform. Do you see this happening?
I actually do. You know, and I kind of contrast this to what we saw with Jason Hayward a year ago, and the animosity that was shown toward Jason Hayward here in St. Louis and among many in the Cardinals fan base. There was a lot of vitriol, and there was a kind of a feeling of like a left at the altar type feeling. I didn't get that same sense when Dexter Fowler left Chicago. I mean, the fact that the Cubs weren't bidding on him in the same way that the Cardinals were Jason Hayward a year earlier, I think made it a little bit of a different situation. So I'm sure at Wrigley Field you'll have some boo birds. But I think that first at bat that Dexter Fowler takes at Wrigley Field, I think the Cubs fans will show their appreciation for what he meant to the Cubs championship team. Again, you can't take away from him what happened there last year. So I think the reception is going to be pretty strong. Of course, that'll probably tail off as these two teams meet more often as the season goes on. But from what I've gathered, you know, particularly on social media, he's still very much a beloved figure up there in Chicago.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And for what it's worth, your colleague, Carrie Muscat, our Cubs reporter, pretty much said the same thing, that he's going to get a rousing standing ovation before his first at-bat. But then, as Carrie summed it up quite nicely, she said, after that first at-bat, he's a St. Louis Cardinal. And I think everybody can agree that, you know what, it'll be a nice moment from then on out. It is Cubs versus Cardinals. The battle lines are drawn, and that's how it's going to be. Jen, projection number two. After his Gold Glove streak was snapped at 8 years this past season, Yadier Molina bounces back and wins the Gold Glove in 2017.
Oh, I hope I'm not stoned for this, because I know how popular a figure Yadi is here in St. Louis, but I'm not sure that I can, with any confidence, say that I project him to win a Gold Glove next year. That's not to say that Yadi can't still be a big piece on this team, but you look at where he is, reaching his mid-30s, the fact that some of the defensive metrics showed that he's coming off the worst defensive season of his career, and probably, too, the realistic outlook that he's going to be playing fewer games at some point in the near future. Kind of look at all that together, as well as some of the elite catchers in this league defensively. I mean, Buster Posey, Yasmani Grandal, Francis Buscarelli in Pittsburgh. I think there's going to be a lot of competition for that award, and I'm not sure now that kind of that streak of Gold Gloves awards is over, the precedent isn't necessarily there to continue voting for Yadi just based on history either. So, I wouldn't count him out on anything, because he's proven so many people wrong in so many different times in his career, but I'm not sure I would say that he's a favorite to win the Gold Glove award heading into next year.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the consensus. You can never count him out. He'll be in the mix, but maybe this is Buster Posey's to lose after he snapped the streak, winning it in 2016. Maybe he goes on a run of his own. Time will tell. Jen, this one might be a reach considering his difficulties this past season, his injury history as well, and his age, but you can never count the guy out. Projection number three, Adam Wainwright wins 15 games.
Yeah, I'd say that is probably a bit of a reach. If you were to put me on the spot right now in January and ask how I think Adam Wainwright does this year, I think his year will be better in 2017 than it was in 2016, but I do think his ceiling is no longer as high as it was during his prime years as the ace of the staff. So, I look at Adam as the guy who maybe wins around 13, 14 games, 15 if things go really, really well. But again, I think our expectations for what he can bring have to change a little bit given where he is in his career and the injuries that he's overcome. The good news for Adam Wainwright is he's a year further removed from the Achilles surgery he got. His mechanics kind of worked through all those issues last year, so he hopes to come into spring training with a little better feel for pitching than he did a year ago. And kind of like Yadi, I never want to count Adam Wainwright out of anything, but my expectation is that he lines up more as a number three starter for this team, and again, maybe wins a dozen or just over a dozen games.
Yeah, I think that's what most people would agree with. So if Wainwright becomes a mid-rotation guy, you got to think that Carlos Martinez kind of ascends to be that that undisputed ace of this staff. And that brings us to projection number four, and that is this, Jen. Both Carlos Martinez and Aledmys Diaz are named All-Stars.
Yeah, I'll agree on that one. I think Carlos Martinez, well, we've seen it the last couple years, is a budding star. I mean, one of the best young pitchers in the game, and the fact that he was able to make it through last year without any recurring issues with the shoulder was a very good sign. He came real close to that 200-inning benchmark, which I would expect that he'll blow past this year. So, yeah, I mean, I could easily see him representing the National League, the Cardinals and the National League team in Miami this summer. And Aledmys Diaz coming off a sensational rookie year, I don't see anything in his way to stop him either. Now, the fact that he does play a position where there are a lot of young stars might make that competition at shortstop a little bit difficult. But as you look at this team and the potential pieces that this organization wants to build around, I think those two come near the top of the list in terms of part of the Cardinals' future core.
And, Jen, moving on from that, a bit of a curveball here, something that just popped into my mind, but I want to get your take on this. Another projection. The Cardinals re-signed Brandon Moss. Do you think they do that?
That's a really good question, and it's baffling that I have yet to hear Brandon Moss's name brought up in connection with any team this winter. I still probably put that as unlikely, but that being said, the Cardinals could use another left-handed bat, and they could particularly use a left-handed hitting outfielder. Brandon Moss fits that bill. He could be a good bat off the bench, a little bit of insurance at first base, so if his price has dropped that dramatically, and if there really is no interest in him and he still wants to play, is willing to sign a one-year deal for not a lot of money, perhaps the Cardinals do broach that. I wouldn't have told you that a month ago, but again, kind of the radio silence on Brandon Moss's future leads me to believe there's not a lot of interest. So, again, I still probably couch it as unlikely, but perhaps a little more of a possibility than it was a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I agree. As time goes on and, his market dwindles, maybe a reunion is the most logical thing for both sides. We will certainly see. Jen, to wrap things up here, a two-part question. Here's part A, pretty cut and dry. The Cardinals get back in the playoffs in 2017.
I think they do, but I think they do as a wild card. Catching the Cubs, I think, is going to be a pretty large feat. And you look at the 17.5 game gap that there was last year, and it's a pretty sizable gap to erase in one off season. But I think this is a team that's set up to win 87 to 90 games. And typically, if you can get to 90 games, you can get a wild card spot. So I would say yes, as of right now, the fact that they're also going to be playing in a division with two really bad teams that they can beat up upon 19 times each during the season, I think that's going to help. And I think that they should be able to get back into the postseason.
Yeah, no offense to the Brewers or Reds, of course, but point well taken. And Jen, the B parts of that two-part question, and this is a bit of a reach considering we've talked about the credentials of Carlos Martinez, but part B of this projection is Alex Reyes starts that first postseason game.
Whew. And if we're talking a wild card game, that would be something. He has the potential. And in fact, the way things were lining up last October, I think Alex Reyes would have been the Cardinals' number two starter if they had gotten into the postseason. But I think right now I would still give that nod to Carlos Martinez unless injury happens to him during the year or kind of he comes off the rails at any point during the season. I think Carlos Martinez is going to emerge as the staff ace, but I think Alex Reyes is going to be a big part in getting him there. And whether it's the first postseason game or the second one, I think he would be a big part of a Cardinals rotation in October. And it's one reason why Cardinals are going to be very careful with his workload over the season so that they can have him if they're able to make that run.
Yeah, that's a huge X factor for the Cardinals in 2017. The exploits of the youngster, Alex Reyes. We'll see what happens. Jen Langosch, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time. We will do it again soon. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, St. Louis Cardinals. It is Tuesday, the 10th day of January. We're talking Pirates baseball today with Adam Berry, our Pirates reporter, and Adam, as I stand here in New York City amongst, or amidst, 20-degree temperatures, you are where right now?
I am in beautiful Bradenton, Florida, where it is 70 degrees for Pirates voluntary workouts, a week of sort of mini-camp type activities, and a great chance to get out of the snow and cold.
Yeah, I'll say. How long are you down there?
It is a week-long thing. Some guys come and go throughout the week. Some guys drop in, drop out. But for the most part, it's a week of outdoor baseball activities at Pirate City.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people a little envious of you right now, and I am among them. So we will forge forward as you are enjoying the weather and getting a tan and soaking up the sunshine. And us poor saps in the Northeast are doing none of those things, but maybe some baseball talk will warm me up, so that's what we'll do, obviously. Adam, the theme of today's podcast is you and the other 29 beat reporters for MLB.com were tasked with coming up with some bold predictions for your respective clubs in 2017. So with that in mind, what is your bold prediction for this Pirates team in the upcoming season?
Yeah, mine had to do with the offseason, and I went out on the limb that we've all been talking about here lately and said that they will find a way, step up, and acquire Jose Quintana, the left-hander from the Chicago White Sox. That is my quote-unquote bold prediction, which usually predictions go wrong in the offseason. But as we've talked about before, this one is kind of based in reality, given their reported and stated interest in just all the ways that he makes pretty much perfect sense for the Pirates in 2017 and beyond.
Yeah, I think many people would agree. And if you throw Quintana into the mix with Garrett Cole and Jameson Taillon and now Ivan Nova, who becomes your number four, And then Chad Kuhl at the number five. That's a rotation that stacks up with pretty much any rotation in the game, in my humble opinion. So we'll see if the Pirates do pull that off. Now, Adam, the question is, of course, you have daydreams about getting Quintana into that rotation, which is great. But the flip side is, what would it cost?
Yeah, the cost would be prohibitive. That might be the thing that keeps them out of the running ultimately. You know, maybe something they can revisit at a later date, given Quintana's contract. He's under club control for another 4 years. The White Sox are in a position of strength, kind of like the Pirates were with Andrew McCutchen, where, you know, they don't have to deal him. They can hold him and try to find a better deal at a later date if they don't get exactly what they're looking for. And odds are they're looking for pretty high-end prospects or young major league talent. I think you'd probably start with a couple of the Pirates' top five prospects, guys like Tyler Glasnow, Austin Meadows, Josh Bell, Kevin Newman, Mitch Keller, players kind of that caliber. And it's kind of funny that you know, these talks happen, and then you come down to minicamp where a lot of those players actually are working out down here, and you know, you see them and you talk to them, and you're just kind of reminded that these guys have pretty high ceilings in the major leagues, and you know, they would be with the team for up to 6 years when they do finally get to Pittsburgh. So it kind of becomes, you know, when these players are real to you, it becomes a little bit harder to imagine parting with some of them, much less, you know, several of them within the same deal. So I'm curious to see how that carries on, but I was asked to make a prediction, and I did so and went out there with Jose Quintana.
And a bold prediction it certainly was, and I will say that if this trade does get executed and guys like Bell and Glasnow and Meadows are become members of the White Sox, I'll tell you, Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, they're going to be doing backflips when they see this White Sox team and the guys they're going to have in their farm system after the sale and Eaton trade. So that would be a minor league farm system for the ages if the White Sox and Pirates can pull something off. But again, as with everything else in life, time will tell. So, Adam, what we're going to do now is transition from the bold prediction into some projections necessarily for the 2017 season, and I got five or six I want to throw at you. It's stuff that we've covered throughout the duration of the offseason already, but let's kind of start at the top. Andrew McCutchen coming off a down 2016, the subject of many trade rumors all hot stove season long. So the first projection for you, Adam, is Andrew McCutchen is named an all-star in 2017. Yes or no?
I'll say yes. You look back at, you know, even the season that he had last year, he, you know, hit 24 home runs. He led, you know, led the team in RBIs. He's still a pretty productive offensive player. It was just odd to see him down close to league average. I think a fresh start, time off as he comes back will definitely benefit him. He basically said that he never felt right from the start of the season. What you saw the last 2 months of the year would probably be encouraging toward this projection of him kind of recapturing that all-star form. So I'll say that he goes out and does that. The other part of that is that all-star picks are typically based more on offensive numbers, and I think it's more likely that Andrew McCutchen bounces back offensively than defensively.
Yeah, that's a good point. The defense is rarely taken into consideration for anything involving midseason, and the all-star game obviously is the biggest part of that. So if Andrew McCutchen can put up McCutchen-esque numbers like he has in past years, no reason to think he won't be in the All-Star game in 2017. Adam, projection number two. This is kind of a bold one on my end. Let's see if you agree or disagree. Both Gerrit Cole and Jameson Taillon each win 15 games.
Man, it's hard to evaluate that just because wins are so dependent on a number of other factors, but I do believe that they will both have really solid years. Taillon is probably right on that, probably the threshold of what you might call that kind of 15-win you know, area. Gerrit Cole has obviously proven that he can do it. He can be a 3 ERA guy or below when he's on his game, as the Pirates hope he will be next season. I think Jameson Taillon can kind of be in that, you know, Francisco Liriano-type number two starter maybe, if that's what the Pirates need him to be next season. Although the sophomore slump is a real thing, as General Manager Neil Huntington likes to remind us. I'll say yes. I think that it's that they both could do that. If you were to ask me if they would average 15 wins, I would say definitely yes. But you made this one a little trickier, and I'll stick with my guns on that and say yes, 15 wins for each.
Okay, there we go. Like you said, Cole has done it before, and Taillon has the talent to do it now. So maybe that becomes a 1-2 punch to envy throughout baseball if Cole and Tyone can each have a strong 2017 campaigns. Adam, projection number three, and this is kind of a down one, but something that I think needs to be addressed. For one reason or another, Jung Ho Kang does not end the season with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I will disagree. I think if he is going to miss time based on all the off-the-field issues that he's had, including the DUI arrest in Korea this offseason, I would imagine it would be at the beginning of the season. And we have seen players most recently, Jeremy Jeffress with the Rangers, come back from a DUI, DWI, you know, crime or arrest or incident without being suspended. Jeffress served time in a rehab clinic for, I think it was about 30 days and came back. I think, you know, there's still been nothing official from MLB or the Pirates, but I think it's more likely, you know, that Jung Ho Kang would serve something at the beginning of the season and go through the paces, go through whatever rehab and help the team decide that he needs. And I think he will probably still end the season with the Pirates.
And that obviously is the hope as we've gone through his off-season or off the field, I should say, difficulties, you know, quite elaborately. And we hope that he, you know, gets it together and can be the player and the person that the Pirates hope he can be for 2017 and beyond. Adam, projection number four, back to Mr. McCutchen we go. This one is Andrew McCutchen and Starling Marte swap spots in the outfield. What do you think?
I will say yes, although I'm doing that with a little bit of trepidation. Our colleague Mike Petriello made some pretty convincing arguments about the merits of Andrew McCutchen playing right field. And that's actually something that I kind of agree with. I think the concern there would be his arm, but I think playing in front of the right field is a little more shallow at PNC Park. The arm is not as big of an issue. The arm actually wasn't a huge issue in center field this past season, so I think people might be overstating the effects there. And the problem with playing left field at PNC, if you're going to move out of center, is that left field is basically a second center. Just given the space and the depth of the left field area at PNC Park. So I'll tell you what, I just talked myself out of that answer. I'm going to disagree. I think Marte will be in center field, but McCutchen will move to right and Polanco to left. The Pirates actually just asked Neil Huntington yesterday whether or not they've solidified anything with their outfield plans, and he said they are still working through the process, which means they are either still talking about it or they've figured it out and they're not quite ready to unveil it yet. But my guess at this point is Polanco in left, Marte in center, McCutchen in right.
Isn't it great when you can talk yourself out of things? I always find that's a, you know, interesting talent that a person can have, and you just did it, so well done. But yeah, Mike Petriello, our StatCast guru, providing some convincing arguments that maybe Mr. McCutchen fits better in right field and Polanco goes to left, as you said. It'll be an interesting outfield configuration come opening day for the Pirates, no question. Adam, down the stretch we come. Number five, Josh Bell is a top three finisher, assuming he does not get traded, of course, in Rookie of the Year voting of the National League.
Boy, I have not quite analyzed the field all that closely, but I'll say yes, top three in the overall BBWA voting. I think he's, more than anything, he's going to be the first baseman from the start of the season, and guys tend to do better in the Rookie of the Year voting when they play a full season, get a full season's worth of at-bats. He's basically already kind of learned how to punch back to the league as it adjusted to him because he did it this past season. He had a lot of, you know, a lot of games, a lot of at-bats, a lot of experience already under his belt. He just barely missed the rookie cutoff anyway. So I think he'll come in with some experience. The switch hitter, he'll play most every day. I will say that he is a top three finisher. That's a little bit independent of the field at this point because it's hard to say who'll be in the running, but I think Bell has the potential to have a really, really strong rookie year.
Yeah, hard to disagree. And, Adam, to wrap things up, there was once a time where it was odd to see the Pirates in the playoffs. Now we're in a time where it's odd to see them not in the playoffs. After making it 3 years in a row, they miss out in 2016. So, quite simply, the Pittsburgh Pirates are a playoff team in 2017. What do you think?
I think they could be a wild card team, depending just so much on how the rest of the NL plays out. I think it's really hard to pencil them in as an NL Central champ just because the Cubs are still around and they don't seem like they're going anywhere anytime soon. But, you know, they have proven in from 2013 to 15 that they are strong enough to, you know, they're a good enough team to crack that wild card mix. You know, the Cardinals are going to be kind of a roadblock to that. Just the fact that, you know, really to say that either the Cardinals or Pirates are going to make the postseason each year, you're almost assuming three teams from the NL Central, you know, if you're going to go out on that limb with the Pirates. So that's what I'm going to say at this point. I think that they have certainly the talent. Just a lot of stuff would have to go right. And considering how much went wrong in 2016, why not say all of that could go right in 2017 and they'll be back in the postseason?
Yeah, I think the baseball gods owe them. So maybe, you know, to suffer through the downtime of 2016 will pay dividends in 2017. So, Adam Berry, great stuff as always. We're going to let you get back to your sunshine and your suntan and everything else that goes with the beautiful weather down in Florida. Enjoy your stay. And we will do it again at this time next week, I'm sure. That's Adam Berry joining us here on this Tuesday. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Pittsburgh Pirates. Talking Brewers baseball today on this Tuesday, January 10th. It is Matt Wehmeyer joined by Adam McKelvey, our Brewers reporter. Adam, thank you as always for the time. And the theme today, Mr. McKelvey, is bold predictions and projections for the Brew Crew for the 2017 season, as you and the other 29 beat reporters for MLB.com were assigned to make a bold, earth-shattering prediction for your respective team in the 2017 season. I'm not so sure about the earth-shattering part. Some had them, some didn't. So we're going to hear from you what you think or what you, in your opinion, will be the bold prediction for the Milwaukee Brewers in 2017. So, Adam, the floor is yours. Go ahead.
Well, I was looking through the list of my colleagues, and I do have to admit mine is less bold, but I wanted to pick one that actually has a chance to happen. I think it's that they not only will add a notable late-inning reliever, a name that everybody knows, I think it's going to be two of those guys will wind up with the Brewers. It's a funny market this year and over the past full year in that relievers are so prioritized right now in the game. And you look at what, you know, Andrew Miller, for example, or Aroldis Chapman, what they've fetched in trades, what teams have paid to the top closers available on the free agent market. Relievers are hot, hot, hot. But at the same time, the remaining free agents, including some pretty good pitchers, you know, Greg Holland tops the list of guys who are left, are having to be very, very patient in this free agent market. There is still a ton of work to be done on the free agent reliever front. Milwaukee has traded away three of those guys in the last 5 or 6 months, three closer types. They have needs in that area, and there still are options for them. So my bold prediction is that they will sign multiple notable relievers, and I think at least one of them is going to get a multi-year deal.
There you go. That is a bold prediction indeed. And like you said, it's a whole new era that we're embarking on in Major League Baseball, where at one time you would, you know, break the bank and shell out crazy prospects for elite starting pitching, but now it's almost as if the starting pitching is an afterthought and the bullpen is where it's at. Just get your starter through five and then turn it over to the guys in the pen and lock it down six through nine. That's what the game has become, and that's why we're seeing all these you know, crazy dollar signs and prospect hauls for elite relievers, and that's where it's at. So bold prediction right there from Adam McKelvey. And Adam, now we're going to transition into the other projections for the Brewers in 2017. So let's lead off with this as we go from relief pitching to starting pitching, as we focus on Taylor Youngman. And the projection here is that Taylor Youngman both reclaims and maintains a spot in the rotation. What do you think?
I think that's possible. He was very good when he came up. He's got that funky crossbody delivery. I think Jake Arrieta doesn't throw as hard as Jake Arrieta, obviously not the same, it's the same stuff, but it's kind of a similar motion. And that allowed Taylor Youngman to have a lot of success two seasons ago. This past season, 2016, was a total disaster from the start. Remember, he started Milwaukee's third game of the season. So he was squarely in their plans for this year, fell out of favor, ended up all the way down at Double-A, partly because the Brewers' AAA situation is not ideal in Colorado Springs for pitching. But I think a lot of people have written off Taylor Youngman, especially when you look at a Milwaukee rotation that finished the year with six starters and not counting Youngman among them. All of those guys are back. They have some depth in this area. They also have some prospects coming in players like Josh Hader, the left-hander, Brandon Woodruff, the right-hander, and Jorge Lopez, the former top Brewers pitching prospect, another righty. Those guys are inching toward the big leagues. And I think for all of those reasons, Youngman is getting, you know, pushed out of a lot of people's minds. But if you look at what teams' needs are year to year in terms of the number of starting pitchers they need to get through a season, you can certainly see a scenario where Taylor Youngman gets a chance to start a game, two, three, and then it's just a matter of can he make the most of that opportunity. So I think that there is a possibility, despite the crowded rotation picture at this moment, that Youngman is able to make a series of starts for this team, and whether he has success.
Yeah, he'll have to battle, no question about that, but the talent is there. He's proven it before, if it was an albeit small sample size, but we know he can do it. Hopefully 2017 is the breakthrough for the young, promising Taylor Youngman. Adam, a name that Brewers fans might not be terribly familiar with yet is Mauricio Dubon. He is the stud shortstop that the Brewers got back in what many people are already calling a heist with the trade with the Red Sox, as they sent Tyler Thornburg to Boston. One of the guys they got back in that deal was Mauricio Dubon. Travis Shaw obviously also came in, should take over third base for Milwaukee this season. But Dubon is a guy, like I said, as a Red Sox fan personally, I've followed him for a couple years. He's going to be something else. So I want to ask you for projection number two. Mauricio Dubon makes his major league debut in 2017. Is that a possibility?
Possibility, but I'm going to put this one in the unlikely category. He's 22 years old. He won't be 23 until mid-July. He also plays for a team that has a pretty good shortstop in Orlando Arcia, who came up last year as the Brewers' top prospect. They are very much committed to him as the shortstop of the future. And I think a player like Dubon, if he does get up to the big league, it's going to be because he's an incredible athlete, and he's very versatile, and he can play multiple positions. But I think at this point, when you're talking about a 22-year-old with the ceiling that he has and the high hopes that he brings, I'm not certain the Brewers are going to be tremendously eager to move him off shortstop. I think they're going to want to play him at shortstop as much as possible and see if he can stick there. So for that reason alone, I think he has a chance to spend the full season in the minor leagues. He could reach AAA this year. That is, you know, certainly after being at AA last year, that's a real possibility. But I think it's much more likely that he spends the year in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of people's guess, is that 2018 will be the ETA on Mauricio Dubon. But, boy, he's got all the talent in the world, and that trade could one day be seen as quite the thievery on the part of the Brewers. But, again, time will tell. Adam, projection number three, the Brewers will regret letting Chris Carter go after leading the NL last season with 41 home runs. What do you think here?
Well, this is a tough one because it all depends on what Eric Thames does. The decision to let Chris Carter go after the Brewers gave a three-year deal to Eric Thames, coming over after three really huge seasons in South Korea. The projections that are coming out on Thames are extremely promising. You know, projecting an on-base percentage, for example, hovering around 370, that would very much work for the Brewers. 20-plus home runs, that would work for the Brewers. Chris Carter hit 41 home runs, but that was his big skill. He was just okay at first base. He did, you know, the average was as expected, as the track record says, it was low. The strikeout total was high, a club record. He really was, you know, they know what they were letting go there. So if Eric Thames can give you a decent on base, you know, if he can produce a 20 homer, 350 on base, they are not going to regret letting Chris Carter go.
Yeah, Carter, you know, like you said, he has the one great skill, but other than that, there are some definite holes in his game. And Eric Thames, a huge X factor for the Brewers in 2017. We'll see what he does in his second tour of duty as a big leaguer. Projection number five, Adam, Jonathan Villar, after leading the senior circuit in steals last year, is named an All-Star for the first time.
Yeah, I'm gonna say this is a solid one. I could see this happening, and thank you for the idea, because we always have to do a prediction story in spring training, and I might steal this one for that. Last year, by the way, I predicted, not to toot my own horn, that Chris Carter would hit 40 homers.
There you go.
And he did, so I'm riding a one-year winning streak in this category. But I think there's a good chance of this. He's going to get to play second base, which the Brewers believe is going to be a much more natural position for him coming up as a shortstop, playing in the middle of the diamond alongside Orlando Arcia. It's just going to be a more natural fit for him than when VR was at third base during the second half of last season, and he was just a bit uncomfortable there. So that defensive comfort theoretically could help him have some comfort on the offensive side of the ball. He was very good. And I would say one thing about Jonathan Villar. He got better as last season went on in terms of his decision-making on the bases. And, you know, it's one thing to lead the league in steals. It's another to show that you can get better and be smarter while doing that as the year progressed. And I think with a lot of help from Carlos Cibero, the Brewers' first base coach, Jonathan Villar was an improved player in terms of his thought process as last year went on, and he has an opportunity to be better again next year. So I'm with you on this one. I would predict as well that Jonathan Villar is an all-star.
Yeah, one of baseball's quieter success stories in 2016. Hopefully he can build off that for 2017. Adam, to wrap up here, simply the Brewers finish above 500, yes or no?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say that they're not quite there yet. Now, this one last year, my prediction was way off because I had conversations with people about the possibility of the Brewers losing 100 games last season. They did not lose 100 games. They were better, I think, than most people thought they were going to be, going 73 and 89 with some good individual success stories. I think next year could be around that same area. Maybe they're a 75-ish win team. But if they can continue to see positive development in individuals, you know, say Orlando Arcia shows that he's a better player at the plate. Let's say Jimmy Nelson has a bounce-back season on the mound. You could still point to reasons that it was a successful year. So I'm going to say sub-500, but that doesn't necessarily spell a bad season for the Brewers.
Yeah, agreed. Progress can be made, even if it's not completely reflected in the one loss column. We'll see if the Brewers can take another step forward here in 2017. That's a good place to wrap this one up on this Tuesday afternoon. Adam McKelvey, our thanks to you as always. We'll do it again at this time next week. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Milwaukee Brewers. We're talking Reds baseball today on this Tuesday, the 10th of January, with Mark Sheldon, our Reds reporter. Mark, thanks as always for the time, and today's theme is all about predictions and projections for the Reds in the 2017 season. So you and the other 29 beat reporters for MLB.com were assigned to give a bold prediction for the team that you cover. So, Mark, with that in mind, the stage is yours. What is your bold prediction for the 2017 Cincinnati Reds?
I'll couch this by saying I'm not sure how bold it is, but I did go out and say that the Reds between now and spring training, or maybe during spring training, will or should sign a starting pitcher, a veteran pitcher, to supplement the battle for the lone rotation spot that's open. A lot of kids are competing for that spot, but as the first half of last year demonstrated, they got caught shorthanded by injuries and some young guys that were not prepared or ready to pitch in the major leagues yet. So I think having a veteran guy to kind of stabilize things would be very needed.
And, Mark, what are the odds that that veteran's name could be Jason Hamill?
I think very low. I don't think they're going to allocate a lot of money for this particular pitcher. The names I would kind of look at maybe would be like a Bud Norris type of guy. You know, maybe Tim Lincecum if he's not getting other offers, especially since he's a West Coast kind of guy. But, this is the kind of pitcher where they're going to sign – kind of a little reminiscent of Alfredo Simon last year, which obviously did not work out. That was a big backfire. But what the idea would be is he'd be there to be able to compete and add depth for the rotation if they need it. But also if these young guys like Amir Garrett, Cody Reed, or Robert Stevenson, or Tim Adelman rise to the occasion and take that job and run with it, or eventually come up during the season, this person would have to be flexible enough to realize their situation and go to the bullpen or even perhaps AAA. So you're not going to court a lot of frontline guys or big-name guys. These are guys that are going to be looking for an opportunity, but knowing that their opportunity may not always be out of the rotation.
Yeah, and that's a good point, that sometimes that's a hard sell to tell a veteran guy who's used to starting that, you know what, a starting spot is not guaranteed, but hopefully somebody is out there that can meet those requirements and give the Reds that veteran presence that they really need at the back end of that rotation. So, Mark, let's transition from that bold prediction to some projections for the Reds for the 2017 season. And the first one kind of focuses on the bullpen, so let's start here. Mark, if the Reds are not contending by the All-Star break, or by the trade deadline, I should say, Raisel Iglesias is traded to a contending team. What do you think?
I would be stunned if they did that, only because of his you know, his situation. They allocated money for him to come from Cuba. He's under club control through 2020, and he's making, you know, basically $4 to $5 million a year. He could go to opt out into arbitration, which might make him some more money. But if the Reds are sticking with this idea that they hope to contend by 2018, he's going to be a front and center part of that. He's needed in their bullpen. So I would say he would not go anywhere. But then again, as Dick Williams has maintained, he's always open to listening to any trade offer. And if they're blown away by something that makes the club better, he would definitely listen. But I would say no.
Yeah, I would lean towards no myself. But again, you know, given the premium on, you know, these flame-throwing relievers who put up these insane numbers in the late innings, you know, every team's looking for that kind of help at the trade deadline when you when you're going for it. And maybe Iglesias is a guy whose name at least comes up in conversations. But I'm with you that I would lean more towards no than yes as to seeing him traded under any circumstance. But we will see what transpires during the season. Mark, projection number two, Brandon Phillips demands a trade after he is benched in favor of some of the younger guys like Jose Peraza, Dilson Herrera perhaps. But despite demanding a trade, the Reds unable to unload him. That this is a mouthful here, but how do you digest all that?
Yeah, that's going to be a murky one to predict. But I would say that I don't see him demanding a trade. He could have been traded, as we learned now, in November to the Braves if he wanted. He could have accepted a trade last year to Washington or Arizona. So he's well aware of what's down the pike in terms of young players. But the one thing that hasn't happened to him yet, it didn't happen this past season, is he hasn't lost any playing time. And I do imagine that that will not sit well with him, no matter how they couch it or how they present it. This is a guy who played through a broken hand this past season, never went on the disabled list. He got banged up a lot, does not like to miss games. That's one thing about him you could definitely say to him in a positive way. But I would imagine there's going to be a threshold at some point. He's owed $14 million. Whether he demands a trade or not, that they're going to be able to say they can write off the rest of that money if they want to look ahead to 2018 with what they have in Herrera or Peraza, and they would eventually either DFA or release him. Because I just, you know, at some point, if they're not contending especially, they need to start looking for next season and giving other guys playing time.
Yeah, it could be a tricky situation to see what develops between the veteran gamer Brandon Phillips and some of the younger guys who want that playing time. It'll be interesting to see how Brian Price sorts all this out as the season wears on. Mark, projection number three, Nick Senzel rockets through the minor leagues, and he makes his major league debut sometime in 2017.
Based on talking to Dick Williams last month, I do not see that happening. Right now, it's still up in the air whether he starts the season in high A or in double A. He went to low A and finished the year in Dayton in 2016. But right now, they don't appear to be on the super express route. He's definitely on the express route, but I would not expect to see him this coming season. They're not going to rush him. They also have Eugenio Suarez at third base right now. He's a young guy. Obviously, Senzel is the probably the long-term future at that position, but I would not expect him in 2017.
Yeah, I think most people agree he is a season away, maybe a 2018 arrival, but you never know. The talent is certainly there. We'll see what develops. Mark, projection number four, Anthony DeSclafani wins 15 games. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a very possible thing, especially if he's healthy. He could have done that this past season had he not missed so much time with that oblique injury. He didn't really debut until mid to late June. So if he does what he did last season and is able to be healthy and as consistent as he's been, I could see him winning 15 games. I can also see him being an all-star. He's just a guy that seems to be coming into his own. He's becoming one of those guys. I think you and I talked about him in the past. I don't know if he'll ever be known as an elite starter in baseball, but I definitely think he'll be a guy that teams know about, and he's going to become, I think, a little bit more popular, and he's poised to break out.
Yeah, and 2017 could be that year for the man they call Disco. We'll see if he does reach that 15-win threshold. Number five, Mark, this one stunned me when I looked at his baseball reference page, but somehow Billy Hamilton has never led the National League in steals. That absolutely blew me away. So does he do it for the first time in his career this season?
Well, for him, and the reason why he hasn't is because of injuries. He missed it by, I think, one stolen base 2 years ago. He obviously got passed last year. He's finished the last 3 years injured. And that obviously doesn't help him compile stolen base numbers. He missed almost all of September last season. But if he stays healthy, yes, I think he could definitely get to 70 steals, and he could definitely lead the league. It's certainly doable. He had a lot of encouraging signs before his injury in the second half. He seemed to straighten things out and got on base a lot more, was hitting better. And when he gets on base, he's almost a guarantee to get to second base. So I would say definitely will lead the NL. Caveat if he's healthy.
Yeah, big caveat there. I was looking for the thick black ink on the in the stolen base column on Baseball Reference. Didn't see any. Thought it had to be a mistake despite all the time he has missed due to injury. That just tells you how good he is that you think that despite missing all these games, he would still lead the league in stolen bases. He's never done it. Maybe 2017 will be the year that Billy Hamilton wins the stolen base crown. And Mark, projection number 6, this one tongue-in-cheek, obviously, but Marty Brenneman made headlines recently, you know, with his soliloquy, I guess, on Joey Votto. So at some point during the season, does Marty's head explode talking about Joey Votto during a broadcast? I hope not, but what do you think?
No, and honestly, I'm going to be serious for a minute. I really don't understand why this is becoming a big deal. It didn't make local headlines. I know nationally some people definitely talked about it. Marty's long held his opinions, and some of them run counter to what other people believe or even what the club believes or what I believe. I don't agree with him on what he thinks about Joey Votto, and I've talked to him about it. But, you know, he's just been one of those guys. You know, a lot of people are used to broadcasters that toe the company line and don't have opinions, and sometimes they're vanilla. Marty has always been candid about his views on every topic. He's never backed down. Sometimes when he gets an opinion, even if he knows he's wrong, I think sometimes he just digs in. He doesn't like to change his opinion publicly, but he's a good man. And him and Votto have had discussions. I mean, if you remember previous winter, he and Votto had some, he was in the headlines for some things he said about Votto. And I remember when Marty and Joey Votto were both in camp, they spoke privately. I watched them talk at their locker, and everything was cool. Joey Votto has never said anything bad about Marty Brenneman. I think the comment last year was that Joey Votto is no longer an elite player. And Votto kind of understood that he hadn't played like an elite player in the previous seasons. And now, he definitely backed it up that he was in 2016. And I would not expect this to be an issue going forward. I don't know why it's an issue now. You know, Marty has long said what he feels, and I also know that a caller, it was based on a caller, and I read the transcript. I wasn't actually listening when it happened. I didn't think he was out of line. I think he came strong with his opinion, and that's what he's always done, and people in Cincinnati understand that.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head as to why this made headlines. It's because Marty Brenneman is anything but vanilla. He's anything but a company man, and it was so refreshing to hear a team broadcaster, especially one as legendary as entrenched as him, give such an unfiltered opinion and really not care what anybody else thinks. I think that's the reason why it made headlines, because you so rarely hear that from broadcasters, especially you know, from guys of his stature, and that's why it really generated the buzz that it did. But hats off to Marty Brenneman for having his opinion. Hats off to Joey Votto for accepting the criticism and continuing to be the player that he is. And hopefully 2017 proves fruitful for him, as he will, of course, skip the World Baseball Classic. And here's to hoping he puts together two good halves in 2017 to lead the Cincinnati Reds. Good place to wrap this one up, Mark. We'll do it again next week. Mark Sheldon, our thanks to you. In the meantime, it's Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Cincinnati Reds. It is Tuesday, the 10th day of January. We're talking Cubs baseball today with Kerry Muscat, our Cubs reporter. Kerry, thank you as always for the time. And the theme of today's podcast here is predictions and projections for the Cubs for the upcoming 2017 season. And Kerry, you and the other 29 beat reporters were assigned to kind of make a bold prediction for your respective team for the upcoming Major League Baseball season. So, Kerry, with that in mind, what is your bold prediction for the Cubs, the reigning champs, in the 2017 season?
I don't know if I would call it bold. It was not trying to diminish the assignment or anything, but it was just the Cubs have talked about how much they would like to have depth as far as their pitching goes. And Travis Wood, who was a kind of important part of this team as it's progressed over the years, is still out there on the free agent market. So I guess what I wouldn't mind seeing is if they brought Wood back, and it's not that far-fetched. He would like to start. They could stretch him out in spring training so that he could be available in terms of insurance. He's done very well, actually, in the bullpen, so perhaps they'll keep him there. But I don't know if the Cubs are really comfortable with the amount of starting pitching that they have. So I'd like to see somehow, some way for them to get some additional arms in there. And Travis, I think, would be a good fit.
I think it'd be an excellent fit. I think a lot of fans would agree. And, Carrie, at any point this offseason, did either the Cubs or Travis Wood himself express interest in the two sides reuniting, or no discussions of that nature that you're aware of just yet?
Oh, no, they've talked. Yeah, they've talked. You know, it's not necessarily Wood. At this particular, as you know, the way it works, you know, it's the agent talking to the Cubs people. You know, they have to leave it in their hands. But Travis is But the real popular guy in the team, did his job well, did everything they wanted, played left field when Joe Maddon flew him out there for a couple games. You know, fun guy. And I just think it would be nice to have more arms, and the fact that he's still on the market makes him an attractive option.
Yeah, and not just more arms, but more left-handed arms, that he would prove very valuable in a number of roles. And as you said, heck, throw him out in left field occasionally and let him go to town out
sure.
there. So we'll see.
He loves to hit, so
yeah.
What the heck.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, why not? He likes to hit, likes to have fun, likes to play the field. He'd be a perfect fit to reunite with the Cubs in 2017. We'll see what the coming weeks hold in that regard. So, Carrie, we're going to kind of transition now from that bold prediction to projections for the Cubs in the 2017 season. I know that Jason Hayward obviously has been a hot topic coming off a down offensive year. He's still as good as ever defensively. But, Carey, projection number one, agree or disagree, Jason Hayward hits 15 home runs this season.
I hate to put numbers on guys. This is a cop-out, but I'm going to say he's going to do double digits. How about that?
Okay, that works.
That's kind of a cop-out because he hit seven last year. But I guess I would prefer to see him improve on the average more than the home runs. That would be, you know, he hit 230 last year. That's very un-Hayward like for a guy who hit like 290 the year before. Yeah, he'll hit double-digit home runs, but I think more important to him and more important to the Cubs is that he can get that batting average up and contribute that way.
Yeah, agreed. If he can just get on base with more frequency, let the Bryants and Rizzos of the world do the work in getting him home. So hopefully a uptick in batting average is in the cards for Jason Hayward here in 2017. Carey, projection number two, Kyle Schwarber becomes both the primary leadoff hitter and left fielder for this team. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a really good chance he could be the primary leadoff guy. However, because he's coming off of surgery to repair two torn ligaments in his knee, he's not going to be playing 162 games despite what fans would like to see. So I don't know if he'll be the primary left fielder because you still have Javi Baez at second, so where does Ben Zobrist play? So I can see Ben Zobrist in left field quite a bit as well. So I have a feeling there'll be a lot of people out there in left kind of rotating in and out as Maddon sort of works his magic to make sure everybody gets enough at-bats and everybody gets enough rest. I think it'll be interesting to see if Zobrist and Schwarber sort of finish with the same amount of innings out in left field at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, the left field kind of the carousel out there with a number of guys manning that position. But even more interesting, if Schwarber becomes a unconventional leadoff hitter, but we'll see what Joe Maddon has in his bag of tricks for this season. Carey, projection number three, Jake Arrieta is signed to a contract extension before opening day. What do you think here?
I'm going to say no, and it's not because of Jake Arrieta. It's more because he is represented by Scott Boras, who really likes to make sure that his players get the best deal possible. Boras, I think that'll be an interesting discussion once the 2017 season ends, and that Jake will decide to test the market because that'll be his first year of free agency. So I'm going to say no.
Yeah, that's a big X factor you brought up, Mr. Boras. He always, makes things interesting, to say the least, and a good reason to think that something will not get done until the 2017 season has concluded. Projection number four, Carey, I'm dying to get your opinion on this one. Dexter Fowler, wearing a Cardinals uniform, is given a standing O at Wrigley Field before his first at-bat as a member of the Cardinals.
Absolutely. That one I would have no question with. Dexter's presence for this team for the last 2 years really made a difference, which is why you're asking about whether or not Kyle Schwarber's going to lead off. I mean, the Cubs have struggled in years past to find a bona fide leadoff hitter, and Dexter was the man. And his first at bat, yes, he'll get a standing ovation. After that, he's a Cardinal, and that's it. But, no, the first at bat will be fine.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. The Cubs fans, after seeing what Dexter gave them, not just last year, the past 2 years, I think he's going to get a very warm reception. But then after that, like you said, he's wearing that hated Cardinal uniform, and all bets are off. But for the first at-bat, yes, it'll be a heartwarming moment for sure. Kerry, want to get your opinion on this one, too. Want to get your opinion on all of them, obviously, but especially the last one and this one, too. For the Cubs home opener, Take Me Out to the Ball Game is sung by none other than David Ross. What do you think?
I saw that, and that's actually kind of an interesting option. I don't think – there have only been a few players that have really become just as lovable as David Ross has become with this team. Mark DeRosa is another one, and it's in a short amount of time. And it's not a bad option. Ross will be at the Cubs convention this weekend, and he's going to be an alum, which was very weird to see him listed as a member of the alumni as opposed to being a regular player. So the team still has not announced his role, so he's got some irons in the fire. I know he's been considering broadcast opportunities. He's been considering, working with the team in some kind of capacity. So I think it might depend on what his job status is, if that makes sense. But yeah, I think the fans would really get a kick out of seeing Grandpa Rossi up in the broadcast booth singing.
Yeah, that would be quite a moment. I think that would be a tremendous honor for whoever gets that role on opening day to sing Take Me Out to the Ball Game when the flag is raised, and maybe Grandpa Rossi is the guy to have that honor on opening day. We will see. Kerry, last but not least, the Cubs won 100 games last year. Do they do it again this year?
I'm going to say no, because that was really hard to do. And I was looking at the standings and saw that only three teams won 95 games or more, with the Cubs being at the top with the 103. If they can win 95, I think that they'd be very happy, and I think that that would be quite an accomplishment. So, no, let's go at 95 and see how they go from there.
Yeah, I agree. Just to get into the mid-90s would be something, and then hopefully gear up for a title defense in October, and we'll see if the Cubs can make it back-to-back. Great place to wrap this one up, Kerry Muscat. Our thanks to you. We'll do it again soon for sure. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras, Chicago Cubs.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.